Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 76. I am Michael Citro, the managing editor from themainland.com, and joining me, one of our writers, Dave Rowe. And Dave, we are now inside the 2017 MLS season.
Not only that, but we're undefeated so far.
First place, baby.
I'll take it.
Yeah, in fact, if it wasn't for a little bit of a meltdown by Atlanta United to give up that second goal, Orlando City would be in first place all by themselves in the Eastern Conference, and which is probably not a huge endorsement for the Eastern Conference based on the play this weekend. But Orlando City has gone out and defeated rival New York City FC 1-0 in the opening game of the brand spanking new stadium, and 3 points against the hated rival at home in a very emotional match. And we'll get more into that in just a bit. But as you can probably tell, we're recording this on Tuesday night. My voice still has not quite fully recovered from Sunday. Typically, I would be in the press box for these games covering them. But I wanted to get a feel for that safe standing section, Dave. I wanted to get up there with the supporters and you know, experience what that standing section is like. And it was everything that, you know, people said it would be. It was a tremendous experience to see the game from there. I wrote a story about it for themainland.com. You can catch that there. The safe standing section delivered fully everything that we thought it would. It was loud. It was, you know, it afforded a great view of the game. We went up very high, cut just a couple of rows from the top. In fact, the last little bit, last half hour or so before recording this podcast, I was trying to find myself on the fan cam, but because of the angle of the fan cam, I believe I'm obscured behind a ruckus flag. Me and several friends. In fact, I went to the game with my former podcast partner, Andrew Harrison. Me and him went, and we met up with a couple other former Mainland writers, Wade Williams and Luis Hernandez. So we all watched the game together. We also saw another former colleague, Brent Petkus, before the game, and we looked for Kevin Mercer, but we didn't find him before the game. Didn't see Sean Rollins, but, you know, a lot of Mainlanders there. Did see Austin David. He was covering the game, and because of the extreme amount of interest in the game, he didn't get to sit in the press box. He got to he had to sit in section 7, I believe, and so did Scott Crumbly. So Gavin was the only one of us in the press box for the wow. opener. So but we did have a strong Mainland presence at the opening game, and I do want to say that the safe standing section, supporter section, is a fantastic place to see the game. We yelled, we cheered, we, you know, screamed, we chanted, we sung, and we stomped our feet. The aluminum flooring makes for nice, you know, loud sounds when you stomp. The roof holds all the noise in. It was much louder and much more boisterous and I think an intimidating atmosphere than anything that we've experienced at the Citrus Bowl / Camping World Stadium. And the only flaw that I found is that if you have a full beer and you put it in the cup holder and you're jumping up and down, the vibrations spill a little bit of your beer out. So make sure you take a few sips before you put the beer in the beer holder, in the cup holder there, in the safe standing section. That would be my advice to first timers.
Now, let me ask you, you say that that was something you found out. Is that because you saw it happen to other people? Because I know that you were not drinking that beer that slowly.
Yeah, actually, it was Andrew's beer that was that was overflowing. I have to say, I thought that there would be a lot of problems, and maybe there were in other areas, but for our perspective, we got in fairly easily. It was a little bit of a delay getting through the metal detectors, and I think they probably have to do a little bit better job of getting people to flow through that a little quicker. But it wasn't like horrible or anything. It just was a bit of a pain. It was just like, kind of, come on, we want to get in already, kind of thing. I thought everything went off pretty well.
And we talked about the possibility of that last week. Mm-hmm. We knew that, that there was probably going to be a little bit slower. It's going to be delays. I mean, it's the first time that everybody's doing it, not just the staff, but of course all the fans coming in. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and then you've also got, from a fan perspective, you want to get in there, so you're going to be impatient. And so what might actually be a reasonable amount of time might feel unreasonable because mm-hmm. you're just wanting to get in there. So, it sounds like, from what you're saying, that it overall it went well. I can tell you from the seat on my couch that the stadium was absolutely beautiful, and I had friends over.
Nice.
And just as we're watching, the start of everything, we were all just marveling at how great it looked. Like you said, with the roof keeping, obviously keeping the noise in.
Seem loud on the television? Did it seem like the crowd was loud? Yeah.
No, it absolutely did. You could definitely tell a difference. I even remember thinking at one point, I'm like, I bet the commentators are having to up the voice a little bit, or they got the mics turned up a little bit with the sound deadening going on. And so, yeah, we definitely noticed that. And then the wall. I mean, it just – we were amazed, and it can't even be close to what you were experiencing being on the wall, but just looking at it, we were in awe. I mean, we couldn't stop commenting on it for the first 3 minutes, before the game started.
Well, it's terraced very nicely because the stairs weren't overly steep. It didn't seem like it didn't seem overly, tiring getting up there. Because you're not really that high. I think maybe what it's the same height as maybe a three-story building at the highest point or something like that. But like I said, the stairs were just normal stairs. You just walked up them, and it was terraced very well so that a short guy like me wasn't trying to see over the guy in front of him. I could see over everybody just fine, and I'm sure the people in front of me were much taller than me. And we went up about halfway, right behind the goal at first, and then we plopped in to this empty hole, and this guy says, "Hey, I'm saving these for my buddies." And it was like, "You're saving seats in a seatless section? Is that what you're doing? Is that what's going on here?" And so Andrew was like, "Oh, I don't care. I'll just stand here. I don't care. You can't save seats." And I was like, "Nah, let's go up higher." So I talked him into going up higher about two rows from the top. And it was just an amazing view. As soon as we got up there, I knew it was the right place to be because you could see everything perfectly. You had a great view. It was like, oh, we're going to see the play develop. We're going to see who's open before the guy with the ball does. We're going to see how, people are going to make their runs and that kind of thing, where the danger is and all that. And they were great seats, not seats, but it was a great spot to watch the game from. And you didn't feel like you were, having vertigo because you were up high or anything, or because it was steep. It was just really a great view. It was kind of like, obviously it was made for that. It was like the people that make scenic overlooks are the kind of people that were in charge of figuring out, kind of how deep the scaffolding needs to be or the terracing needs to be. And, I took a picture of the standing room of, cause they have like little lines on each side. This is your area right here. And, I spread my feet out a little bit so you could see the number in between my feet. But I think if everybody was packed in there, it would, I thought, man, this is going to feel a little bit cramped and crowded, but it didn't. You had plenty of room. And I know that there were people probably crowded in lower,
Right.
Because at the top where we were, there were a few gaps, and I know the place was sold out. So I think people were just kind of, oh, I want to stand with you, and we're down here, so everybody just cram in, because it did look a little bit more cramped down lower. So I don't think everybody kind of spread out and took one spot like they, you know, I guess had envisioned, but it worked, and everybody got in and out, and it didn't seem like there were any problems. I didn't notice any, you know, pushing and shoving or anything. Everybody's had a real good time, and you know, of course, I said this in my story, but you could kind of tell that there was the drum line was down there. Mm-hmm. But you more felt him than you heard it. You didn't really hear it in your ears because the place was just really loud, and you just kind of felt it. Kind of felt the vibration, you know.
I've been in that type of atmosphere, in a different venue, but I know exactly where you're talking and what you're talking about. Where it's so loud. I've been at a game once where it was so loud that I was yelling so loud that I couldn't hear anything. like the sound of my voice and the sound that was coming at me like zeroed out in my eardrums, and it just everything just went blank. It was so loud. So, and I'm looking at the picture of you're talking about of the spacing, and it doesn't in the picture really doesn't look like a lot of space. But you know, from what you're saying, it's plenty. What I also notice in that picture is I can see where the beer spilt.
Actually, I think that probably happened before the beer spill. I took that pretty early on when we got up there.
Okay.
But yeah, here was the cool thing was that, I mean, Andrew and I could talk to each other if we yelled like right in each other. It's kind of like being at a rock concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that yes, my ears were not ringing like after a really loud rock concert, but you could tell that, you know, my eardrums were vibrating. Like when I was driving home, I could tell it's like, okay, yeah, it's not like a really, you know, it's not like I just saw the Scorpions or something, but it was, or AC/DC, but it's still, you can tell that I was in a place that was really loud, just a short time ago, because there was that feeling in your, you know, my eardrums are still kind of shaking a little bit in there, but it was a good event. And, you know, we can get into the game a little bit more now that we've talked about the new Purple Palace that the
I want to make one more note about the Purple Palace.
Okay.
The other thing that we noticed looking at it on TV was when you would get a certain camera view of an end line or a sideline, how close the stands are to the field. And just the obviously creating an intimacy for the fans, but also that immediacy for the players and the opposing players. It was, you know, I mean, saying it again, but the atmosphere must have been incredible. And that had to be a huge contribution to that. Just that how everything is it had to be not closed in a bad way, but just, like I say, intimate for both the fans and the players.
Yeah, you're right on top of the pitch. Basically, there's not a lot of room. I was checking it out the other night at the kids versus pros game, and looking where the photographers would be, and the photographers are all very cramped in a very tight space. There's only a few yards between the touchline and the stands on each side. I mean, you saw it when Kyle Larin scored. He didn't have to run far to be right by the fans. I mean, he was just step off the field, and you're right, almost touching them.
Exactly.
And it's got to be an intimidating atmosphere. I mean, and it seemed like it to me that New York had a lot of flubs with the last ball, because we felt like we were affecting the game. We felt like the noise and the atmosphere was affecting the game. And I don't know if it was, because, you know, you can never tell these things. You know, how focused is a professional athlete at any given moment? Is he even aware of this stuff that's going on? But
sure.
Because if you see a Major League Baseball player on the road in a World Series game, those guys can still hit home runs when the crowd is just going absolutely bananas. So it's hard to say, but it felt like we were affecting the game, and it certainly the result was what we wanted. As I never felt really like New York was going to score in that game. I always felt like Orlando City kind of had it handled, and I was actually surprised at how many shots that they got on, not only shot attempts they had, but shots on goal. Mm-hmm. When I got home and looked at the box score, I was like, really? Because I can remember like two or three decent chances that they had, but I didn't remember all of those. And it seemed like most of them were kind of maybe from angles or distance, because it seemed like Bendik was comfortable most of the game, but he had like two or three. He was up for save of the week. He had one on Harrison. He had one on Ring in the first half, and I think there was one from Okolie that looked like when we were there and you looked live, it looked, oh man, that was close. But when you got home and you looked at it on the replay, you went, it wasn't really that tough of a save, you know?
Right.
But you know, we never felt like New York would score. We just didn't. And I can't remember ever having that feeling about an Orlando City team, even when they were in the USL.
Yeah, that's new. That's I hope that keeps up, because that felt really good going, wow, the defense is solid.
It really was. It was it was, I mean, for it being the first real competitive game for the Jose Aja, Jonathan Spector center back pairing, they just did an amazing job, and the fullbacks did as well. And I mean, we're into it now, so I mean, this is basically the recap portion of our show.
Yes,
but Orlando
great
City
wins, segue.
Orlando City wins 1-0, but I think, you know, Jason Christ surprised everybody. We all thought that PC would start on the left fullback and that Toya would start on the right fullback, because PC was I mean, by a lot of people's accounts, was winning that battle for left back. Mm-hmm. But I think when it came down to it, I think Jason Christ looked at who he was playing and said, this is a very potent offensive team. I want my best defender on the field at left back, so I'm going to put Toya back out there, and I'm going to put Will Johnson at right back. And Will Johnson, obviously a very effective defensive player, but none of us expected him to play right back. And he did a damn fine job.
He was up and down the field a bit too. So there may have been some times where he wasn't in an ideal position, you know, for being a defender, but nothing. I mean, they went at him in the second half.
They really did.
And he, you know, he never broke, you know, I mean, it's so, you know, of course, you know, the center was Aja and Specter were doing an incredible job in the center. So, I mean, that of course is going to make, you know, the outside guy's job easier. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you know, Johnson showed why bringing him in was an excellent idea. Coach Christ said it himself. He goes, he put in a Will Johnson, you know, performance, meaning that, hey, this is, you know, you can expect this type of thing from this player, and he delivered it.
He really did. And you know, he came out with that, and with him moving back there, that opened up a hole for Servando Carrasco to play. So you had Carrasco and Nocerino playing, and along with Kaká starting and Matias Perez-Garcia, and then Kyle Lahren up top with Rivas. So most of the lineup was about what we expected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, Kaká gets hurt just in the eighth minute, I think it was, and gets pulled off a couple of minutes later. And he's going to be out for 6 weeks. We'll talk a little bit more about his injury later. But it really seemed to there was a good couple of minutes there where I think that the crowd was a bit deflated.
Yeah.
And Giles Barnes came on, and, you know, then of course, shortly thereafter, they, you know, he just sends in Rivas, takes the ball from Rivas one time, just a perfect back post cross. And, Lahren gets up and puts it in, and the place went bananas. And I couldn't hear a thing. It was just white noise raining down. And it was just, you know, hugs and high fives all around, and, you know, strangers and friends alike. And it was just complete, you know, bedlam, really. It was just an unbelievable experience to be there for that first goal and for the place to just erupt like that as Orlando City took the lead.
And, you know, it wasn't quite bedlam here at the house, but there were high fives and there was a lot of yelling when that happened. And you're right, that Barnes's cross was – and, of course, you know, having the benefit of replay, you know, watching it at home, I got to see it a couple times, you know, right then and there. And you're right, it was perfect. One touch, back post, and, you know, Kyle, you know, being as tall as he is, just gets up, puts the head down, puts it in, and it was absolutely beautiful. And it, fortunately, it turned out to be all that we needed.
Yeah, it was – after the goal, it seemed like the team sort of sagged a bit. The defensive midfielders sagged back toward the defense, and you know, there wasn't much help whenever the ball came forward for Barnes or MPG or Rivas. There really wasn't a lot of help. But even with that, Kyle Larin should have scored a second goal.
Yes.
He had a golden chance, and instead of trying to beat Sean Johnson, he decided he wanted to try to put on the brakes, cut back behind the defender, and get a better angle. And when he did that, he flubbed his lines a little bit. The ball, you know, hit the defender's leg, and the chance went, you know, without a shot even. Rivas had a couple of chances that he couldn't quite put on target, but at least he wasn't hitting us in the face up in the top of the deck. So he's getting closer.
That's right. He's dialing it in. Yeah. So, you know,
in fact, he had one that would have been on target, but it was deflected just wide for a corner kick, which I believe was Orlando City's only corner kick of the entire game. But we were getting a little concerned. The defending was going well. They always seemed to be mostly in control. I think there was the one time in the first half, Spectre got caught by Alexander Ring getting in and putting in a decent shot that Bendick made a great save on. And there was the one deflected ball that came out to Harrison and he made a save on. But mostly the center backs were very well shielded by the defensive midfielders and the fullbacks. So it seemed like there was a pretty good wall around Joe Bendick most of the night. The problem was whenever they'd get forward again, the guys weren't keeping the ball. They were just trying these crazy passes, and they would miss, and then all of a sudden it was intercepted and coming back the other way.
It was breaking down the midfield every time. So every time the ball would go forward, it would break down the midfield. The only chances that they had after that were long balls, and you know, those are not necessarily, you know, your best opportunities. You know, it's always better to work it forward. So, but you're right. The defense is solid, and funny enough, when we talked last week, one of our keys to the game was the back line being solid, and look at that. I mean, they were, and we got the win. So obviously, great job by them, but you know, also a good job by us by pointing that out.
That's right. We did it.
All right, go us.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't even trying to really play out of the back, because I pointed this out in the stands. I pointed out to Andrew. I said, look. Watch when Bendick goes to take the goal kick. Watch the fullbacks. Every time, the fullbacks ran down the field. So Bendick had no short options. He had to go long with every ball. And I don't know if that was something they talked about, but it didn't seem like in crisis post-game comments that he was happy about it. And the other thing was that, you know, by doing that, so you send the fullbacks down. Now New York City doesn't have to really respect that and spread out. So now they're all compact in the middle of the field and the ball's coming to them. They're just keeping it in front of them. So
right,
it really made
more opportunity. Exactly.
The only way you could really make that play work is if you get the long ball from Bendick has to find the head at the exact right time of the friendly player with the exact right run being made the timing of that has to be just perfect. And it wasn't perfect. It wasn't even close to perfect a lot of those times. In fact, the last couple of ones that Bendick sent forward ended up with Akoli getting shots on goal. So with just Villa had a ridiculous backheel flick that went behind, I think it was Johnson, and onto Akoli. But that was an amazing play, but Bendick was there to make the save. And it was just the good thing was, to me, is, you know, you'd look up every once in a while. You'd look up at the clock and go, oh, okay, there's 10 minutes left. Okay, there's 5 minutes left. But, you know, I never felt worried. I really never thought – I thought it would take some kind of weird fluke for them to actually put one in the net. And that's not to say that couldn't happen, and I was certainly worried that some fluky thing could happen. But I really didn't think that they were going to score.
Well, I know I kept looking at the clock also, and sitting on the couch and like, you know, I guess different perspective, I'm seeing the time of possession and just seeing those balls in the midfield go away all the time. And seeing the amount of shots and of course having that different, you know, field of view from the television. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just post-traumatic stress from previous, you know, times where we would have lost that game. Like, you know, Coach said, you know, I was probably a little bit more worried than you were, but at the same time, they kept clearing it out. They kept taking care of the ball. And, mm-hmm. and then you had the odd times when it would get through, you know, Joe Bendick, who has been nothing but spectacular for this team since he got here, came up time and again, you know, when he needed to. And some of those were, I mean, at least two of those three saves were really excellent saves, which is why he's up for save of the week. But, I mean, I remember, you know, that first one, I think against Ring, just to the timing to get out on the ball, you know, he timed it perfectly, placed himself perfectly, got his hands up, and, you know, it was, and that was the first one. And I was like, okay, good. So Joe's still good. That's good. The back line's better. Okay. I'm feeling pretty good about this. And, fortunately they proved us right. And, I'm absolutely ecstatic with how the defense played. They obviously did everything they needed to do for us to, you know, win the match. And, I hope it's the norm going forward. I think it will be. As a matter of fact, I think that with time, you know, and communication will get better. And if they're already playing like that, and, you know, a couple of them have only been there a couple of weeks, well, excellent.
Yeah, let's see. Let's get them a little bit more, few more reps. I think, obviously, now they're on tape, it's going to be, you know, different from week to week to see what teams do to try to attack them. And, you know, who knows if Johnson will stay at right back, or if Toya will go to right side and PC will play it, or if this Scott Sutter, that they, the recent signing, comes in and is able to play right back. You know, that remains to be seen. But we don't know what we're going to get going forward. Certainly it would be nice to get Will Johnson into the midfield, and mm-hmm. You know, and obviously to get Barnes a little bit more work with his teammates. And it was definitely not good to see the captain go down early. We're going to be without him for at least 6 weeks, and that's at least 5 games. Hopefully the team can tread some water and get some points without him, and we'll see what happens. But the great thing really for me was that to see how many times Donny Toya and Will Johnson, they couldn't flank them. They had to go back. They had to turn back up toward the top of the box time and time again. And right. I think Toya had one kind of bad turnover where he tried to make a play and ended up getting the ball taken off his foot. But I think other than that, Toya was so solid for me. I mean, he was certainly one of the top three players on the field for me. Certainly Bendick was good. I thought Aha and Spectre were both fantastic.
Yep.
Johnson was good. You know, some people were saying, well, you know, they didn't think much of the defensive midfielders, but, you know, they both had very good passing percentage. They, you know, yeah, everything was safe, but you didn't notice them, which is always good for a defensive midfielder. If you don't notice your defensive mids, they're doing a damn good job.
Exactly.
But Laren and Rivas certainly had some chances to maybe put that insurance goal in the net, but couldn't quite get it done. And hopefully the offense will pick it up some. That's going to be tougher, and that brings us to our next topic, which is Kaká, hamstring injury to his left hamstring. The spokesman from Orlando City, it was a grade 1 to 2, which, you know, people said, well, which is it? It's either a grade 1 or grade 2. But, you know, it's either a mild grade 2 or a severe grade 1. You know, it is what it is. We're just passing along the information we have.
When you order a steak, you can get it a lot of different ways. You can have medium, you can have well, you can have medium well. Well, guess what? You can have a 1, you can have a 2, you can have a 1-2. I mean, mm-hmm. So, you know, for I don't know what people who are trying to be that exact's problem is, but yeah. Of course.
And I'm not sure that, you know, for all we know, they got two opinions, and maybe one was a grade 1, one was a grade 2. So maybe that's how they're presenting it. So, but anyway, the captain's out, and that's not a position of strength with the attacking midfield. In fact, I was maybe my biggest surprise with the team sheet was seeing Richie Larea dress for the 18. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, good for that kid, you know.
Right.
So Larea dressed, and he didn't get in the game. Haji Berry got in the game, obviously Barnes, and Chris Nagita was, again, he was a surprise because he was supposed to be out 6 weeks with the adductor strain, and he, I think, was only out about 3 or 3.5.
Yeah.
So good to see Christian get back out there. Didn't get a yellow card, as Gavin pointed out, which is always a plus, and he got a run out. Now, Gavin also pointed out that he was like a minus 30-something on the Audi player index, which, like, he played 10 minutes. The Audi player index is not a real thing. Why are we still talking about this thing?
I've never liked it.
It's, first of all, if you cannot easily explain the formula to somebody, it's not a real thing.
Exactly.
It's just not. If you can, you know, what does the Audi index mean? I mean, I think I was watching the Portland game, and they had, it was Nagby or Audi at the halftime was just, had a miserable score. And they were winning, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Audi is a German company, and this guy who sells cars, I can tell you that German cars are very complicated, so it's no surprise that the Audi player index is going to be complicated. It's just how they do things.
All right. Well, I don't buy it as a real thing. It's like that QBR that they tried to come up with, or the ESPN quarterback rating that came out a few years ago. It was like, it's not a real thing. Let's not use it. Let's never speak of it again. So Orlando City used all its subs, Kyle Aaron with some cramping, and MPG with some cramping, which was, again, I heard some fans grumbling about that. Oh, why, we got to get new trainers. There's obviously something wrong. It's like everybody cramps early in the season. I know there's a guy for Atlanta that kind of limped off, but after the game he was fine. He was cramping. It's a common thing early in the year when everybody's not quite at their peak of fitness yet, and also – they've been playing, like three, four preseason games in just a few weeks' time. It's like you just your body needs time to heal and to become fully fit. So,
I'm not worried.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the cramping. That's gonna go away as the season goes on. So,
absolutely.
As we get deeper into the season, we will see cramping from our opponents when they come down to play in the 98 degree heat with the 99% humidity, and I'm not concerned about it. But one thing I did want to point out is that the other thing is we've had some muscle injuries, some soft tissue injuries. Well, we've changed training staff, so it's not like these are the same people and we got to make a change. They made a change. It's just sometimes it's just bad luck.
Yeah.
Sometimes, granted, Kaká is going to be 35 years old, so he's, you're going to get some muscle pulls, some aches, some pains, that kind of thing from him, but when you see young guys like Rafael Ramos and Christian Aguita having muscle issues, it happens to everybody, and this is the time of year it usually does happen, is right at the beginning. So it's unfortunate we'll be without Kaká, but hopefully they'll be able to step up, and I mean, I would imagine that Barnes and MPG will be the attacking midfielders if they stick with a 4-4-2.
Well, and like we were talking about wanting to get Johnson up into the midfield. So if we do that, if MPG and Barnes are the attacking midfielders, it allows Johnson to come up, be a defensive midfielder, and then we, move Toya and bring in PC, and maybe that's because of the captain going down. Maybe that's how that all shifts around. Mm-hmm. There's been talk of MPG, playing the 10 spot, and he's shown times where he seems to be brilliant on the ball, and other times where he seems to be invisible. Hopefully, the opportunity to make that difference will make a difference for him. And, we'll see him step up to the plate. I think Barnes came on and did everything and more that we could ask for a guy coming off with almost no notice. I mean, nobody's expecting Kaká to go down that quick or come off that quick. Mm-hmm. Barnes was sitting over on the sideline with his, not his jacket on, but, the familiar look of the soccer player with his jacket on the sideline, just kind of chilling out. Well, that's what he was doing. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, hey, guess what? You got to go in. No warm up. And if you could, by the way, put in a perfect cross so that Kyle can score.
Yeah, well, at least he did it. So
that's true. He did.
Big time moment for Giles Barnes, who really seems excited to be an Orlando City player, which is it's really, as a fan, that makes you glad. It's like this. Here's somebody who really wants to be here.
Yep.
And makes no bones about it. So Kaká's hamstring went kablooey. Hopefully he'll heal quickly and maybe make it, closer to 5.5 weeks than 7. But we'll see how it goes. And in the meantime, Orlando City will have to just rely on the next man up. So We'll see what the plan is. Again, maybe Scott Sutter can come in and play right back and push Will Johnson up, because even though Will Johnson's a defensive midfielder, he's the kind of guy who excels at linking the back line with the attacking players. And that's exactly what was missing against New York City. So with Will back where he wasn't able to fulfill his normal role of facilitating and moving that ball. And I think I'm really kind of excited to see him in that role next to Nocerino, because I think the two of those together will really be able to link those defenders up with the front line. And I'm anxious to see what kind of runs that get unleashed and have these guys run right onto passes and then next thing you know it's Rivas or Larin in alone on goal. So
well, and given the good passing percentages that most of the team had in the game, and then we talked about the improvements on the defensive line. If Johnson and Nocerino were up there, so we talked about moving it up the field, working it up the field. Mm-hmm. I'm in complete agreement with you. So if we've got the back line set, and then Johnson and Nocerino are able to push it up, then MBG feeds it in. It sounds like a winning formula. Hopefully that's either we're right and and everybody else it's going to be obvious to everybody that would be the way to do it, including our opposition. And hopefully it's just so good that they can't stop it.
Yeah, exactly. So, before we, we're going to get to our we're going to lead in later to talking about the New England match coming up on Saturday. The Revolution lost in their opener. But they'll be at home, and they'll be a little bit desperate, so it'll be an interesting matchup. Orlando City hasn't won in New England. They've drawn several times, and they lost there. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Orlando Pride with our special guest coming up. Before we get that, we haven't talked about our man of the match for Sunday. So who was your man of the match against New York City?
As I was sitting there watching the game, my man of the match was Joey B, because just when you're looking at it on TV, the saves look spectacular. With little distance, it's a tie for me, him and Spectre, just because Spectre coming in and making his presence felt, and seemingly being, pretty dominating in that in that center back position. So my initial thought was Bendik, and of course he's up for save of the week, so I'm not completely off base on that. And then like I said, with a little bit of time, throwing Spectre in there, if I was going to be honest, it would just be the defense.
Yeah, and so Dave's going with a cop out and having men of the match for week one. That doesn't bode well for the rest of the season.
No, it's Joe Bendik. That's who I. As a matter of fact, I mean, you can go back and look into our discussions on Slack, and I said he was my man of the match.
All right, that sounds fair enough. So let's see. I would say that. By the way, Joe Bendik. And Jonathan Spector both made the MLS Team of the Week, so they are in agreement that it was a good weekend for them. Kyle Larin made the bench for Team of the Week. And also the Front Row Soccer named Joe Bendik their MLS Player of the Week for Week 1. So a lot of people loving Joe Bendik, and of course we do as well. I am going to go with Spector for one reason. Number one, I thought that just for him playing his first MLS game, yes, he's got experience in England, but, every league is different. Every league has its quirks and, mm-hmm. He's only been with his teammates, for a matter of weeks. He came out and really put in a tremendous effort. Not only was he good, he wasn't perfect. He put a few feet wrong a couple of times, did get beat by Ring on the one I mentioned earlier. But I thought overall, not only was he solid, I thought he really directed his teammates well. I thought his leadership was amazing. I think that might have been Jose Aja's best game as a Lion, and I attribute that to working with Jonathan Spector. And I also think that Spector did a great job of there were a few times when, guys got forward and there were, getting ready to have a set piece or something. And Spectre didn't back down from anybody. I mean, there were
right. Oh,
when New York City players were all over him, and he's like, you know, he was like, he took charge, and he stood up and battled for his teammates and really led by example. And I think for me, that's why he's my man of the match, not just, you know, for overall performance. I think that he made other people better, kept them calm, kept them together, directed them where they needed to be, and just was that he provided the leadership that, you know, Jason Christ mentioned it in his post-game press conference. Last year's team probably would have found a way to lose that game and right. drop at least 2 points, if not all of them. And Spectre wasn't going to let that happen. And again, I think he's partly the reason why I felt like, you know, I didn't see New York scoring unless something went crazy and broke down weird, you know, some kind of fluke play. Ricochet that got behind somebody just as Villa was running or something, you know, right. I just didn't see it happening. And I attribute that to Jonathan Spector. So he's my man of the match.
Well, and I remember him getting into that shoving mat. I don't even remember who it was, cause I was just too in awe of the replay, but him getting in a shoving match with somebody and I think Jose having come in there and, you know, kind of break it up a little bit, but which, you know, since, you know, nobody got a penalty, nothing happened for it. So I was like, okay, great, way to stand up to him.
Yeah. So it was funny. There's a picture of, I think it's Aha getting hugged by little Ronald Matarita, that Nick Leyva took in our photo gallery. So if you go in our photo gallery, there's a few pictures of that little scuffle, and you can check that out. So go to themainland.com and look for our photo gallery in New York City, Orlando City versus New York City FC photo gallery, which Nick got some great shots on Sunday. So
yeah,
happy about that. Let's turn our attention to another team that's going to be playing in Orlando City Stadium this year. They are going to break their preseason camp on Monday. That's the Orlando Pride. We're going to have a special guest coming up. I was fortunate enough to talk to Pride forward Sarah Hagen from Appleton, Wisconsin. She, of course, was a member of the inaugural Orlando Pride. She's, as a matter of fact, one of the first players introduced to Orlando, along with Kaylin Kyle and Alex Morgan. But I was fortunate enough to talk to Sarah Hagen, and I want to thank Jackie Maynard from Orlando City for setting that up for me. And so here is our interview with Sarah Hagen coming up right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, we're very happy to have with us from the Orlando Pride, Sarah Hagen. Sarah, thanks for being on the Mainland Podcast with us.
Thank you for having me.
Look, I'm not gonna delay. I have to know what your thoughts are, because I definitely have my own thoughts on this situation. But, you know, tell me your personal view of Orlando City Stadium, because that's where you guys are going to be playing your games this year.
Oh man, it was pretty awesome. I was there for the men's home opener, and just to see the community in Orlando really respond to having a new, brand new stadium in the area was amazing. Comparing it to playing at the Citrus Bowl or Camping World Stadium, it's really no comparison at all. The environment there is just so much more intimate. You can just sense the feel, the energy that the players are getting on the field. And so, to see, you know, the men's team get their first win there and all the hype that's been going on, I think I'm not the only one on our team that's excited for a season to start.
Now, you got to try out the pitch a little bit against one of the toughest opponents of your career in the Kids versus Pros game the other night. What was that experience mm-hmm. like for you?
Oh, that was a blast. And again, you know, stepping onto that pitch for the first time was exciting, and to, you know, step on it with some of the men's players and, you know, speeding up was a privilege. But playing against the kids was a great time, and just seeing their faces, how, you know, excited, and you get to see that, you know, they really looked up to each and every one of us. And for them to be able to compete against a professional athlete, I know if, you know, I was in their position, I would have been thrilled. And I think overall it was just it was a great experience, seeing everyone, you know, with smiles on their faces, and to be able to do that for the community was great.
Now we're just days away from preseason training opening for the NWSL. I know that this is a time of year when everybody's getting very, very excited about the 2017 season, and I'm sure it's no different for you. But how have you gone about preparing this off season? Did you do anything different? What did you focus on?
Yeah. So, I mean, with the season coming up, we start on the 13th. So a lot of just very anxious for it to start, I think. You know, the off season for the NWSL is quite long. Mm-hmm. You know, some of us, our last practice was, you know, in October. So it's been, you know, quite a long off season. I've made sure to, you know, get home back in Wisconsin to see my family, spend time with them during the holidays. But then come January 1st, I moved back to Orlando and started training outside. And there's really no comparison for me to, you know, to be, you know, wanting to train outside versus inside on turf. So mm-hmm. I got back here, you know, as soon as I could, and have been working hard to make sure I'm prepared for our first practice.
Now, one of the things that, you know, I've always wondered about is, you know, the individual meetings that you have with the coach at the end of the season, and I'm sure you met with Tom Sormani. Mm-hmm. What did Tom tell you at the end of the 2016 season, going into the off season?
Yeah, I met with, you know, our coaching staff at the end of our last season, and you know, they gave me feedback as far as, you know, my strengths and weaknesses, and basically just analyze, you know, the minutes that I had played in, you know, for games, and also just, you know, what they've seen in practice. And, you know, I try to, you know, we get a game, kind of a plan for our off season workouts and what to improve on. So, you know, for me, it's a little different. You know, coming back to the U.S. after playing in Germany, I haven't had as much game time. So, I think just making sure that I come in prepared and, you know, fit, and then hopefully getting that game time fitness is really what I need the most.
Now, the NWSL season, they've extended it a little bit this year. Last year, you guys played everybody twice except Houston, and this year you're going to get to see some of those teams more than twice, a few of those mm-hmm. teams more than twice. What do you think of the extension of the season? How will it change you guys as sort of your preparation to face a team that many times, and you know, just tell me some of your thoughts on the added games for you.
I think it's great. I think it's great for our league. You know, comparing it to when I played over in Germany, we had our season. We may not have had more games, but our season, you know, we were training longer. It felt more of like a full-time job. I think I only had 7 weeks out of the whole entire year where I wasn't, you know, with the team. So I think adding those games in and, you know, really trying to promote the game, you know, around the country, I think will be great for our sport. And then, yeah, playing, you know, some of the teams, you know, 3 times this next season will give us, you know, it's kind of like that rubber match, you know, if you win one, lose one, it's kind of like seeing who's, you know, actually the better team. So mm-hmm. I think it'll be a lot of fun to not really just rest on those 2 games and hopefully, you know, kind of get after it.
Well, we're anxiously waiting for the entire schedule to come out for Lifetime, but you guys get to actually be on the first national game of the week on Lifetime. That's got to be very exciting for you as a player and for everyone in the league to know that you have a national TV deal and that every week your league is going to be showcased on national television across the country.
Yeah, that's, I mean, when I heard about that, I, you know, my mouth like kind of dropped, and I was super excited to hear just, you know, that our game is growing and that people are, you know, sponsors are showing more interest in it. And, you know, that's, it just takes, you know, that one company or one sponsor to really show that they care about what we do for our living. And yeah, to be on the first, game that's showed on their program. It's going to be, I mean, it's historic. So I'm excited, and, you know, hopefully we can put on a good performance so that people want to continue to watch it.
Now, you talked about, you know, the sponsors showing some interest, things like that. But for the NWSL, there's been a little bit of I wouldn't say negative press, but obviously it's been in the news this season with some of the very prominent U.S. players going to play in Europe. And some of them are mm-hmm. coming back and some of them are not, including, you know, your teammate Alex Morgan playing in France, and she will miss some of the season. Now, I think as a player, that's got to give you sort of mixed mixed emotions about that, because this is a teammate that's going to be missing for some significant games. But at the same time, as a professional athlete, you can't really knock a player for wanting to play, you know, and get paid and play against some of the world's best players. So it's got to be a little bit of a mixed bag for you.
Yeah, I mean, I understand both sides. At the league, you want your best players in your country to be playing in your league. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said, I've played over in Germany. I've done the overseas thing. So from that experience, I can tell you that, playing in a different country and playing living in a different culture is an experience that I'll never forget. And I think some of those players, and also playing with those players, I learned so much from my teammates playing over in Germany, because I had teammates from, Italy and Sweden, Norway, Austria. So, I mean, just all, you get a different sense of what they've learned in their countries. You can't hate or knock on someone who, like Alex Morgan or Crystal Dunn or whoever's gone over and has decided to play overseas. I think obviously there's some fans who, are not going to agree with that and want to watch them play. But I think as, each individual looks at what, they need in their career, I think it's a great opportunity for those players.
Yeah,
and hopefully it gives some other players, in the league a chance to shine. So,
yeah, and I think a lot of fans also forget that there's, that the women's professional athletes are not pulling in, the dollars that the men are at this point, and also they have, you have as professional athletes, you have a very limited shelf life in terms of your playing career, so you have to do what you can to maximize that.
Yes, correct. I mean, our salaries aren't very comparable, but, our sport for the women's side is also growing. And so we understand that, you can't just have everything all at once, but it's a process and, hopefully it gets better.
Sarah, what excites you about the 2017 Orlando Pride in terms of, where is this team headed? Obviously, there was some big... a couple of big teammates re-signed just today officially, Steph Catley and Jamia Fields. Talk a little bit about what you expect from this team in 2017.
Hopefully we start getting more of an identity as a team. I think for any team that's an expansion team, you kind of come in and, you're hoping to make an impact on in the league and be able to, make a run for it, have a good solid first season, but it's also very chaotic and everything's new. People, all your players are just thrown together along with the coaching staff, and they don't know how players respond or where to best play them. So hopefully this season, we kind of start getting more of an identity as a team, a sense of style of play. One thing that I've really grown to love in Orlando since day one is just the way that the community responds to our team and the men's team, just the soccer community in Orlando. It's great, and I think playing in our new stadium is only going to make things better. So I'm excited for what's to come for 2017, and hopefully we can get some more W's this year.
Yeah, and you guys are going to be a little bit closer to the defending champions because they moved from Western New York down to North Carolina. So and you'll play that play them multiple times this year as well. Who are some of the teams that, that the Pride need to get on top of to make one of those coveted playoff spots?
You know, I think it's just we can't have any games where we're in it, but then we lose last second, or, you know, a game that we feel that we should win. And that just really, I mean, I can't really say at this point, it's too early, but, you know, as the season goes on and the table, you know, start seeing where some teams are placed in the table, that's when we can, you know, kind of start saying, all right, look, this is a game that we need 3 points at, or if we can, you know, get out of this stretch with, you know, a tie and a win, that would be great. So I think it really just depends. You know, we kind of take it one game at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah Hagen, I want to say again, thank you for being with us on the Mainland Podcast. Before we get out of here, though, you know, obviously the team has a few Australians, added another one this offseason with Alana Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Are you learning to speak Australian?
probably not as good as I would think I am, but I don't try the accent out too much.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us, and certainly the best of luck to you and your teammates on the Orlando Pride this season.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, once again, we want to thank Sarah Hagen for being with us on the Mainland Podcast on episode number 76. Thanks for being with us, Sarah. Thanks again to Jackie Maynard for setting up the interview. And we will have many more interviews with Pride and Orlando City players throughout this 2017 season, and Orlando City B. Let's not forget our USL side, who are in the middle of their preseason. In fact, just had a couple of preseason friendlies this past weekend. Not having a lot of scoring luck, though, our young Lions.
No.
But, you know, we'll get that cleaned up. And I think that we'll start seeing more of Danny Deacon, the rookie player. And I think we'll see, you know, Pierre Da Silva, I think, will play at OCB much of the year. Hopefully he'll get some MLS experience, too. But I think he'll probably be down for most of the year. And we got some new faces. And there might even be another signing or two coming before the USL season starts. But anyway, again, thanks to Sarah, and I really enjoyed talking to her. She was a fun interview, and I hope that she has a very successful season in 2017, along with all the Pride. So, Dave, before we get out of here and wrap up this 76th episode of the Mainland Podcast and put a bow on it, we've got to talk a little bit about Saturday, 2 o'clock Eastern time at a football stadium.
Yeah.
Called Gillette.
Yes.
Still Gillette. They still call it Gillette Stadium.
They call it Gillette. It's still Gillette in good old Foxborough. And I looked up today. The high temperature is going to be 23 degrees.
Wow. That's going to be fun. So, yeah. So Kai Kamara and company, Kellen Rowe, you know, some talented people with the Revolution, and actually haven't got my questionnaire back yet from the New England blog, so there's some questions I have about them. I got to see about, I don't know, maybe 15 total minutes of the Revolution against the Rapids, so I'm gonna have to jump on MLS Live and watch the replay of that. The Revs, I think they had a man sent off with a second yellow, if I'm not mistaken, but they didn't look very good. And the Rapids did their normal boa constrictor routine where they just suck the life out of the game and play defense. And
it is very tough to go into Colorado and come away with anything, because yeah, they are stingy as the day is long. That is for sure.
Hard to break them down. You remember the Orlando City went in there and got a 0-0 draw last year, and it was considered a good result. So
yes,
the Rapids don't look like they've changed a whole lot despite losing Jermaine Jones in the offseason. Anyway, the Revs, again, a team that Orlando City has struggled against, only one victory against the Revs in two seasons, and that came in the most recent meeting, the first meeting after Jason Christ took over the helm at Orlando City. I believe that was a 3-1 decision last year, and Jason Christ's debut at Camping World Stadium, and it was nice to get a win that way, but Mostly what we like to do against the Revs is tie 2-2. We like to have those 2-2 draws. Carlos Rivas got the tying goal and the 2-2 draw at Foxborough last year. So what do you see as the key matchup in this game? And let's get your predicted scoreline for Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, so once again, key of the game is going to be defense. Funny enough, the Revs did almost exactly the same thing that Orlando did on the offseason, which was they went and fortified the back line, added a couple key pieces here and there, but you know, their focus was, you know, getting that back line, you know, stronger. So I think it'll be a question of who did it better. Did we do it better? Did they do it better? The other key for me is what happens in the midfield. You know, who do we put where? We already know what the top's going to look like. We're going to have Rivas and Laren. What does that middle look like for us? I think we've, you know, other than figuring out where Will Johnson's going to be, I think the back line is, you know, at least fairly sorted, you know, three out of the four. Mm-hmm. So how does the midfield play? That's where the match will be won or lost for us. If they play like we did this past Sunday, it could be rough, especially with the temperature. If the passing is crisp and we're able to work the ball forward a little bit more instead of just trying the long ball, and then I think we come out with it. As far as my actual prediction, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. As much as I'd like to go into New England and come out with a win, that doesn't seem to be the norm. And so, unlike you last week, and you were wrong, so hopefully I'll be wrong this week.
Yeah.
You predicted a draw last week. I'm going to predict a draw this week. And like I say, hopefully I'm wrong.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that certainly for me, the key matchup is Orlando City's attack against the defense of New England Revolution. I think that without Kaká in the lineup, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for this team to score. They're going to need a moment of magic from somebody, whether it's MPG, whether it's Rivas feeding into Laren, whether it's Laren creating a shot for himself, whether it's Giles Barnes coming up with something special, whether it's a set piece. I think they're going to have to scuffle for goals here in the next few weeks. And because they just don't have that dynamic player to set in Rivas, to set in Laren in behind the defense. And for me, it's going to be very, very difficult to score goals. But it looks like this is a team capable of maybe limiting damage on the other end. I even before you said it, I already had a 1-1 draw in my mind as well. I think somehow Orlando City needs to get a moment of magic from somebody, and I just don't see us scoring more than one this year up there. The other thing I think is that New England's going to be playing a very desperate game, not wanting to drop their first two games of the season, and being at home is going to be a big help for them. Kai Kamara is probably the likely candidate since he likes to score goals against us.
Yeah, he does. I hate the guy.
He's very, very good at it, apparently. And he's a guy who can not only – he can score in a lot of different ways, very good in the air, very good with his head, and he can create his own shots, which a lot of strikers can't do that. So
yeah.
I just see him breaking through at some point. I think it's 1-1 instead of 2-2 because I think both teams have improved defensively. And I think also Orlando City just won't have its full arsenal of firepower offensively. So I think that speaks to me as a 1-1 draw. I think it would be a decent result, not a great result. Certainly, when I think of the Eastern Conference teams, I think of New England as a team that will be below the red line at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's too early to tell that for sure, but I would just suspect that New England hasn't gotten enough improvement to get over the teams that were ahead of them before, and I think some of the teams behind them got better. So I just see that it's a game that Orlando City would – If Kaká was healthy, I would probably be predicting an Orlando City win. But without him healthy, I'm seeing a draw, and I think we probably need to take points wherever we can get them while the captain's out.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. Hopefully we're both wrong, and Orlando City goes in there and wins 5-0. that would be unprecedented.
That would be great. Yes. But we would take it.
Yeah, we would definitely take it. But it'll be interesting to see how this team comes together. I think I predicted before the season that I think Orlando City might start a little bit slowly and then get better as the season goes on, as these new pieces start to figure each other out and Jason Christ learns what he's got and how to best use them. You know, guys like Barnes and Sutter, guys that haven't been here yet. It will be interesting to see if I think Justin Mapp has been in here as a trialist. It'll be interesting to see if he gets a look if they end up putting Kaká on the disabled list for 6 weeks. That's another possibility. So we'll see what happens there. Justin Mapp was a very, very talented player before he had some injury problems. So he's a guy that if you need some offense, he might be a guy that can help provide it. But it's going to be a work in progress. I think that you might see the team, look great 1 week and then look like they've regressed. But I think it's just a matter of growing pains as new players, and we've got them all over the field, learn to gel together. I mean, I think it was a pretty amazing performance by Toya and Johnson and Spector, back there along with Aha, who wasn't even much of a starter last year. So a great job by those guys. But I think that now they're on film. Teams will start attacking that defensive line a few different ways, and we might see some things that work against it and some things that don't work. So, anyway, you slice it. It'll be interesting to see how the team gels moving forward and how Jason Christ learns to use all the pieces at his disposal. So, anyway, that's basically it. And I'm looking forward to week two, see if this team can keep it going, build on it, build some confidence. I know that they felt pretty good with the win, but I don't think that the team as a whole feels great about the way they performed, and I know that they think that they can get better. So, what we need is a good solid outing against New England. What we need is for Orlando City to go up there and not concede a goal early. It would be so huge for this team to get the first goal.
Absolutely. And no matter what, if we can come away with points, I'm going to be happy. Or a point, I'll be happy. If we come away with three, even better. But at least not come out of there with nothing.
Well, at least if the team can make this new stadium a fortress, then any points you get on the road is going to be gravy.
Yes.
So
Absolutely.
That's one way to look at it, is the team hasn't always done well at home. If they can change just that, and then keep their road results about the same, then they've pretty much done their job in MLS, and that's a good formula for finishing above the red line, is win your home games, steal points where you can on the road.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave. Well, that's going to put a bow on it. That's going to just about do it for episode number 76 of the Mainland Podcast. Please go find us on the interwebs at themainland.com. That's themainland. Maine like a lion's mane, not like Main Street or anything like that. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at the Mainland again, with the Maine like a lion's mane. And you can like us on Twitter, like us on the Facebook. I think some of you can call your grandparents and say, "Hey, the Mainland is on Facebook." I know, Granny, you're still on Facebook. You can like them. And the kids are on all the other stuff now, right? Now it's just the old folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. please, if you like what you hear, go to iTunes and please give us a favorable review and say some nice things about us. It's a good way for us to move up in the iTunes rankings and search engines and that kind of thing. So, this has been it's going to be a weekly thing. We're in the season now. Things are cruising along, and of course, we got Orlando City B and Orlando Pride coming up. Their seasons both starting in the upcoming weeks. So we'll be back next week to talk about the New England Revolution match and preview the following match, which is the Philadelphia Union. That will be game two at the Orlando City Stadium. So lots of fun stuff coming up. We'll have another interview next week. Don't know who it's going to be yet, so we can't tease it. But please, stay tuned to the Mainland for all your Orlando City needs. And on behalf of Dave Rowe, I am Michael Citro, thanking Sarah Hagen once again and signing off, as we usually do, by saying, Go City!